It's the 9th of May 2015. Stefan Sembrovic with Tilly Curran telling us her father's story. Tilly, how does your dad's story begin?
Well, I'm going to only be able to tell you my story of my father because that's what I know and have found out. So I'll have to tell it to you as I began to know it as a child. So my father was born in Podbush near Lvov in a village, and in 1939, in April 1940, he and his mother and sister were deported to Kazakhstan. And he then joined the Polish army when it was set up in 42.
Do you know very much about the circumstances of the deportation?
He was in the April deportation.
Yes.
His father didn't go with him. He had gone earlier into hiding. Mm. And at the when I was a child, no, I didn't know any of those things. So my story really starts with when I was five. Mm. My father left and went to live in Poland. Mm. And I was told that's because he needed to be home and he'd be happier back with his family. So I've known my father and his story through his writing to me. One visit when I was 25, and then more recent visits that we've taken to Poland. So it kind of goes to and fro in time. So these are the pictures that I have when he was in the Polish army, eventually arrived in Scotland, having fought at Monte Cassino and been injured after that. And so I grew up with a few family photos of him in his army uniform. He went then to college, in the Imperial College in London, and trained as an engineer.
Do you want to say any more about his his journey from Lvov to Kazakhstan to Monte Cassino to England at this stage?
I didn't know any more at that.
That's about you just knew the bare bones of it.
Yes, and I grew up with my story is my father left when I was five and went to live in Poland. It was one line long.
Yes.
And the little bit that came with that was that he couldn't concentrate. That's why he needed to be back with his home and family. So as a child, I learnt concentrate and concentration camp. I didn't know what the word meant at that age.
It was a big word.
It was a word one didn't want to have. So he married my mother. They lived initially in Finchley with another Polish couple who did the journey from Poland to Romania, France, and England, which I now know is a very different kind of pattern.
Like my father did.
Yeah. Yes. And they then were moved out from London to Wollongong City, which was the new garden cities that were being built, and that's where I went to my first school. So they had three children, my elder sister, myself, and my brother, within 3 years, and my sister died, and shortly after that he went back to Poland.
It's a sudden illness.
We moved. So a lot happened in that first 5 years that I know happened, but knowing about it has taken a long time.
His
mother came over in 1956, which was when I was born. I thought it might be because I'd been born, but it was because of the Soviet communist regime had an opening in 1956 where some people were able to come and go back. So the family, his family, all ended up in Kłodzko. His mother, his sister, and his father were all relocated, as they say, in what was Silesia. And that's where he then went back to. So right the other side of Poland from when they had started.
So deported from near Lvov.
Yeah.
And of course Stalin had ethnically cleansed, one word would be, the eastern parts of Poland, and prior to shifting the borders. And they were sent back to Western Poland, where again he shifted the borders westward.
And now it's Ukraine, and I haven't been there. So Stanislava, his mother, re-saw him 16 years after he'd set off from that camp in Kazakhstan. And then in 1961, he went back to Poland. So that's a really long time to have not been with your family, to have started a family in another country. And
was he married before?
Not to my knowledge. I do tease my mother that she doesn't know, does she? Because he went on to marry three more times. So right. At school, when people said, "What does your father do?" I'd say he gets married. He
gets married a lot.
Actually, being five was quite old, I now realise. And I've thought more about those first 5 years rather than just when he left. So I've kept all the things that he left, like the children's prayer book, his hanky, the medals, the letters, every letter that he ever sent. And he wrote to us regularly all the way through my life.
Yes.
And so it feels like I grew up with Poland being with folk art, with these 1960s fabulous postcards, which were Ilford on their front door. You go in, so you recognise them sometimes.
We're looking at some very characteristically Polish illustrations, colour, ink wash perhaps.
Some very modern things, and then the old folk stuff as well. But I used to always get these envelopes with arty stamps and very colourful things. And so I have a box of all the letters that he sent. And then he had another child, Janusz.
Mm.
His second wife, and we carried on writing and more parcels, and
yes.
My mother and her were very supportive around us sending coffee, vaccinations, blankets, everything.
So this would be, what year did he leave? Did he leave England?
1961.
61.
And I think Janusz was born in 1963. But my mother's always said he needed to go back. There's never been any bad feeling from her about it, so we just carried on supporting a family that happened to be there. And I grew up thinking there was an iron curtain for sure.
Yes.
And he might dig his way under or something. But you couldn't go. So there's lots of years of postcards. He visited me once. In 1981, I think it was.
Yes.
Which was very strange.
20 years after he left.
I remember him as I'd remembered him. Mm. And I went back to that afterwards. But that was the real person. and he wanted really to come over and stay. But in 1991, he died in a head-on car accident.
Yes.
On the ice. And so that no one in the family told us to 3 months after. So there was no issue about going to a funeral or anything because we didn't know. And then what we knew was that the different parts of the family had disagreements about who should do what. So another 10 years kind of went past. And my son by then was 21.
Yes.
And he said to me,
yes.
Would you like to come to Poland? And I said, no, Joe, you can't go. It's an iron curtain. And he said, and I knew it had come down.
He said, Mom,
I've just been to Bulgaria and all these places. And he really, really liked it in Prague. Yes. And I said no a lot, but actually we started to make the plan and go. But it took my child, the next generation, to have the courage to say, we can do that. it's possible. And yes. Psychologically very trusting that I wasn't going to, needed someone who would know that what they were taking on. And that was my child. So we went on the bus from Bristol over 2 days.
On the bus. You went on the bus. Yes.
Which was great because it was full of Polish people. Yes. And I needed that length of a journey to be on my way to it.
So what were they wearing on the bus? What was it like?
We got to London and there was just a furious rush to get on it, even though everyone had a booked seat.
Yes.
It was like a panic to get on it. But it was very friendly and chatty and all in Polish. I mean, there was nothing I could understand.
Everybody with a basket with food.
I didn't notice that. Well, I think probably that wasn't on shawls. My mind. Yeah, wraps around. And yeah. So we went through France, I guess, Belgium, Germany, and I slept and woke, and it was just exactly the same concrete shattering. Because I thought of Poland as being in black and white because of the photos, being snow and wolves because of the folk stories. And so it was quite strange to see it in colour, and it was kind of drizzle, and arrival wasn't like that. But we went first to Krakow and stayed a night there, and I had an address, a phone number for my father's cousin, which I tried a couple of times, but no one had mentioned her, and there was no answer, so I thought she was probably older and had died. We made our first visit to my father's niece in Chesterhove, and hired a car and drove, and my niece joined me, who was younger than Jo, 16, and we set off, not being able to read any of the road signs quick enough to look at whether it was the same one on the map. And road camber that dips and two-lane roads, which you don't often do here now. Anyway, I can't imagine how I did that, really, but I did. Aww. And we went to Chesterhove and were very strongly welcomed. And I'd never had any written contact with this part of the family. And Tomek, my cousin's husband, said that brought out these books in English that my father had had as an engineer, and he'd translated to them so that he trained him up to go and become an engineer.
Yes.
And he was very supportive of our visit. And we stayed with them in their country house, so they have a city house and a lovely cabin-y thing in the woods. And then we set off to my stepsister, from the fourth wife, and she had prepared with written English words ready for us and had a massive welcome. Absolutely adored Joe, lined up her daughter for him and all that. And so you never know, do you, when you go to find family, how they might be or how they might see us. But it was very odd because the things we'd sent over were there, which I had never imagined either. So I saw things like I've kept things here.
Yes.
They've kept things there. And then I went and drove to Prague and picked up my brother and his son. So then we all went to cousins in Kosko.
Yes.
So another.
It's in eastern Poland, is that right? Whereabouts is it?
It's just south of Wrocław, straight down the line. And very near the Prague.
Near the Czech border.
That was cousin Spishik, and he gave us a welcome, just picked me up in the rain and swirled us around us. And he said he never thought we would ever meet. And I'd known how I felt, but I hadn't imagined people there thinking about us. My mother took my father back when he went back in 1961, and she had met all the family, and she took him a carpentry set, and he was, because none of us could speak the same language, was showing me that he had cut the leg of the table when she arrived with his new carpentry set when he was 8.
Yeah.
So he knew the story and was very pleased to meet with us. And from that visit, he, the next morning, gave me photos of... these are the ones that my stepsister gave me, so this is a different set of family, so some of his documents and then some of his past. So this is back when he was in England, and he's here in the college.
Yes, yes.
His school report, which everyone seems to have kept their school reports.
Yes.
And then Sibishik gave me family photos that go right back to what I now know is the 1920s and before that of my father when he was 2 with somebody there in older Polish army uniforms. So suddenly, from finding the relatives in the present who hugged us, I also got a very rapid set of things that went right the way back, which I've never...
The backstory.
Indeed. And then the pictures of Siberia.
He has pictures of Siberia.
This my cousin gave me. This is my father's sister in Siberia, wrapped with a cloth, he said, because she has typhus, and her face was very swollen.
Because typhus was
and this, I don't know who the people are, but he said that that's where they were, and I don't know who you say, Aktyubinsk. Where they set up, I know, from Ursula Muska's
Aktyubinsku.
They developed a way of being able to gain some money through a knitting cooperative.
So we've got some pictures. There's heavily clad group in a wooden building, and I think is that snow in the background. They've got they're well wrapped up from Siberia. There's a group of 30 or 40 people inside around a table.
And there's a Polish eagle, so I don't know whether that might be at some point when they were told. This is 1945.
1945, so this would be.
That would have been after the amnesty, as it was called.
Yes, yes.
Because they didn't get back out at all.
And then there's a group of women, about 10 of them, with two spinning wheels. You're saying they were able to form a little group, a little sewing, spinning group.
Yeah, and I read Ursula Muska's book where she was in the same place, and she talks about a weaving and wool cooperative that.
Yes, a little cooperative.
Try to keep going with. Yes, and then photos like way back where. When you've seen those photos, things look very much better before all of it started, where people were, you know, comfortable,
yes.
Clothed, and.
And what? And here are two elegant women in 1937.
Mm.
These are all in Lviv, with rather smart tilted peak caps, and handbags.
Smiling and laughing.
Smiling, arm in arm, coats with fur collars. But 2 years later, of course, everything changed.
And that's quite important, isn't it, when we see refugees on television or whatever, to know what was it that was there before.
Yes.
And not just to look at broken buildings and things. So, and more school reports of then that's mother's school report.
Right.
And college report. And then this is my father sent a letter from the Red Cross in Tehran to say to his mother that he was all right.
Yeah, so this would be after he left Kazakhstan, he would have travelled to Persia, he would have joined the army forming there.
It says here 1945, but that doesn't quite add up because he was in Italy earlier than, I don't know.
Yes.
That's
a Red Cross letter to back home to mother.
Yes.
Yes.
And then these are the papers that they were given in Kosko, his mother, to say you've been allocated a house. Okay. And in it, you were allowed certain numbers of chairs, tables and furniture.
Yes.
So when I came back, I had to find ways of getting all this translated. So
17th of the 7th. So what year is that? That's
1946 to Kosko.
Right.
I've had different people translate, and that's quite interesting because they're Polish people who are either very young or are my age, and they didn't know their grandparents' stories. So some of what I've learned has been because of meeting people in the translation of it.
So that's part of your story, isn't it? Being part of forming these circles emerge. And
from age of 5 of not having any Polish contact, except the couple that they first lived with, we still know. To having, the Polish down the road is absolutely lovely. This is a letter to say that his sister was awarded compensation for her period of being in Siberia.
Yes.
6 years was for the other part of the family. This is my grandfather's notice of death. And the second day we were there, they took us to the gravestone, because I've also not been brought up with religion, but it would be very important to them that we went straight to the gravestone. So here, especially in my profession, we're very careful about erasure. So it was very direct and very, you need to go here, which was very refreshing because it was very real after having had letters, which is real in its lettery way. But obviously my father never tore me off, he never did anything wrong. And now suddenly I'm faced with the realities of what had happened. So I then looked through my box again each time I've been and found that my father's cousin, Sophia, hadn't died, I'd assumed, at Krakow. Yes. And she has put her story on a Czech website towards greater understanding conflict nations. And I just started to look then at everything. And I wrote to the administrator of that website. So I've got actually hundreds of books in there.
Yes.
And then one day, a few weeks after, I was sat with my laptop and I had to ring my daughter and say, I've had an email from Sophia, but I can't read it. I can read it to you. So my poor daughter had to just sit on the end of the phone while I read this really lovely letter where she tells me that she, her mother was one of four sisters, my father's mother was one of the others. And she explains to me who everybody was and what happened in a letter, which was very unexpected, and I hadn't imagined that she would do that. And my daughter's had just had a child a few months before who's called Sophia, and not knowing that. So she was very delighted to hear there was another little Sophia. And I had sent her some photos. So I carried on then trying to find out more, but I think probably I just stuck with my little story for most of my life. And I got my father's records from the Army Record Centre, which did give me more of that timeline about what happened to him.
Yes, yes.
And how he...
So I'll just read this out. This is from the Army Record Centre. The Polish Second Lieutenant Cavalry, Zbigniew Tchaikovsky, born 24th March 1924 at Podbus. He has recently requested to confirm his commission to the rank of Second Lieutenant on 1st of April 1945 while serving with Polish land forces under British command. So his service was with the 15th Poznański Lancers Regiment as officer cadet from 8th of October 42 to 2nd of July 44. Wounded in action in Italy, that was perhaps Monte Cassino, 2nd of July 44. Hospital treatment in Italy, 3rd Polish Military Hospital, and in the UK, 4th Polish Hospital, from 3rd of July to 2nd of February. So that's 7 months. Yeah, 7 months medical treatment in hospital. Posted to the Polish Military Bureau, Glasgow, for studying. Sergeant Officer Cadet, 2nd of February 45. Commissioned Second Lieutenant Cavalry on 1st of April 45. And posted to 1st Armoured Division Depot on 10th of October 45. So that's from the Keeper of the Archives at the Sikorsky Institute in Prince's Gate. So that's a nutshell summary of his.
He had inquired on that, and that's 1962, that he had needed to get that evidence for his own pension thing, I think. So some of the records were in Polish, obviously, and some of them were
some in English.
In English, and his injury was in Arcona after Monte Cassino.
In where
Arcona, is that in Italy?
Ancona. Oh yes, Ancona, yes.
And there was a photo of him in the records, which I didn't expect to see, but extraordinary records, almost daily, some of them. And the way they kept all those details was very surprising when you hear of the chaos.
Yes.
That they were meticulously writing everything down. So the summary I've got here was from the person who did my translation at Ilford Park, because for the people living there, they often write in and get a summary. So while she did the translation, she said, I just send off, which is the same as what you've just said, but it was quite strange, again, to have this immediate connection. I live just up the road from Ilford.
So here's, and again, this is from the Ministry of Defence. It's second Lieutenant Cavalry, Zbigniew Jan Tchaikovsky. He was in the Polish forces under British command from 1st of April 42 to 6th of September 46. And in the Polish Resettlement Corps from the 7th of September 46 to 21st of February 48. And it says... well, released from the former Soviet Union on the basis of the Sikorsky-Majski Agreement of 30th of July 41, enlisted in the Polish Army on the 31st of January 42 in the former USSR, crossed the Soviet-Iranian border, was evacuated to Iran, came under British command from the 1st of April 42, posted to 15th Poznańsky Lancers Regiment, and then the 14th Wielkopolska Armoured Brigade, 2nd Polish Corps, 8th British Army on 8th of October. Served in the Middle East, Iran, Iraq, Palestine, Egypt, and Italy 44. Evacuated to the United Kingdom for medical treatment 3rd of October. Finally, relinquished his commission on 21st of February 48 on absorption into industry.
And naturalised.
He became naturalised. 14th of November 1952.
So these are documents. Then Joe and his friend, who was Polish, to translate, we went to the Sikorsky Museum and found the date where my father was injured.
Yes.
In these incredible...
Is that a map of the...
records.
Yes.
And this jumps around a bit, but she also translated for me a note that the Hoover Institute sent to me, which they were all asked to reply to a questionnaire.
Yes.
And this is my father's reply to that questionnaire, which surprised me because he was 16.
Yes, yes.
But he wasn't, because it happened later. He would have been older. But this is about the mock voting.
Look at the mock election.
Yeah.
Yes, I'll just... So that was a statement. That was a statement he made at the time... about the time of about the time when the Soviets invaded and they were rounded up.
So he was at secondary school and lodging in Lvov and in Soviet waters, I think.
The details here of a fixed election where the voters were given papers with their names written on, and then they all had to put the cards into the voting box. And a compulsory vote. How these things were done in those days.
So just to finish, I've had the story of Sophia, but I've missed when my father came back, he told my brother and I his story. My mother said, tell them your story. And he said, explained that when he was 15 years old, I probably can't read it all, but it's about how he was told to get his things from school and was taken with his mother, and how his father had already gone into hiding.
Do we know what happened to his father?
I know that he came back. He was a policeman, and I learned a bit more in my next trip, as I went two more times. So, having just had a tiny family history, I've now got more.
quite an elaborate family tree.
That's taken me a long time. So, this is when I went to meet Sophia and Christoph in Krakow, following up on their letter. And that was the notice of my father being given permission to join the Polish army from. So each visit people have given me different parts of my family, my father's story. So this is Sophia sharing her photos and translating things for me. And she was very happy to see us, and I think from all the losses I hadn't appreciated that actually coming back and finding people has been very restoring for not just me but for them as well, to know that some of us have been born and survived. And so she gave me more photos. Some of them are the same as the other family, these go right back to 1911.
And here's a lovely photograph of a bridal couple in what must have been very traditional dress. The groom is wearing long soft leather boots and a long open sleeveless, what do you call that?
Like a waistcoat.
Well, it's a knee-length waistcoat and a sort of brocaded shirt, and the bride has a very nice high collar and it's obviously a wedding dress on with a veil, looking very very dramatic. And on the left we see somebody with a sabre and a small family group with Papa has moustaches on. He'll be wearing a Russian uniform because it would be pre 1920, wouldn't it?
It's living in there. Yes, this is
1911. Yes.
And these photos all went to Siberia and back,
They survived the journey to Siberia and back.
They did, and this is then before all of it happened. And this is my father and Sophia. His family used to spend the summers together.
Yes.
And she said he was her favourite cousin, a bit older. Really a lot of fun, and he was a very changed man when he went to visit them all those years later. She has memories of him as a young man, and then memories of him in the 60s, 70s, and what a lot happened in between. And that was really nice for me to know that they had playful summers and family life.
When you got to Poland, you would have a half brother, or as we say, a brother, and you've met Janusz.
I have met Janusz.
Yes.
And there's more to say there. Well, we met him. I think we were all in shock the first time we met. So we all met, and he lived with his mother in the house where they had all lived in Kotsko, and it was extremely bare boards. Partial furniture.
Yes.
He was studying in Wroclaw and didn't look very well, very nervous. But there was also this conflict between different parts of the family about my father had died.
Yes.
So maybe worried that we were
coming to get the things.
Well, the house belongs to the state, so there's not that fear. But
wanting stuff.
I might have left that in. I've forgotten the order of stuff now. But if I just say that Sophia has been the chair of the Siberia and Katyn Memorial Group in Krakow, and her and her group put up the plaque which is opposite the Wawel Castle,
which I saw last, I have a
CD, and her husband. And the Pope, whose first name I forget, used to go scouting together. So right. Their good friends were good friends. And he would stay with them when he went to.
So there's some there's a picture of her with Pope John Paul.
Yeah. And that's in the Vatican, that picture. So there were some more surprises which I hadn't anticipated.
All these surprises.
And this, Sophia showed us on the map where Footbush is and where the different family were. And apparently my father and his sister have some bit of an oil field.
Oh, good. Good. So, well, that could come in handy. Yes.
And so this is about the setting up of the placards and film. So those are the different bits of story. This is back in Podbush, and this is...
a wonderful photograph. That's father.
The grandfather.
Grandfather.
I think this is... I can't remember now whether... I think it's her who's also my grandmother. So they were policeman and teacher in terms of a village, probably people who lived there with men.
Yeah, so everybody's wearing wonderful shawls. There's a picture of Joseph Pilsudski framed at the bottom. Some of the children in traditional mountain costume with a little mountaineer's axe, and the felt jackets they wear and the headbands. Others are in modern, 1930s clothing. About 20 or 30 people in the picture.
Mm.
Well, 30 probably. And Polish eagle in the background.
Hmm. So we went round Krakow, and this is about her association. So gradually I've put together the map. She didn't know when she was deported with her mother and her mother's sister.
Yes.
And her brother, what had happened to my family. But she told me that my grandfather, who I'd heard was hiding in her house.
Right.
And had been there for 3 months. And one day he went outside and a woman greeted him by name. And then he had to disappear. And they think he went in the direction of Germany rather than Russia. But no one has said much about what happened to him.
Yes.
In prison somewhere. And she has the son Christoph and her daughter Magdalena, who is in Canada and lives there. And she and I are in the same field of work. And we met on the 14th of April in Vancouver at a conference around disabled children.
Right.
So, which was very peculiar, isn't it? This was another trip then back to the Sikorsky Museum with a bit more knowing what to look for. And I found a Christmas card that my father sent to his major at the time. And in the museum, they have these scrapbooks that are very personal. And you think that they're all men, young men, older men supporting the younger men.
Yes.
And that was very nice to think that they kept it. And that you would even send a Christmas card to your major.
So the fam, because of course, well, that's one way they survived, isn't it? Because groups formed, self-supporting groups formed. I mean, when they went to Siberia, they were family groups.
You wonder what happened to
the sewing circles.
Yes.
You mentioned the family groups working together, staying together, and as you say, if you were a single person or somebody who wasn't part of a family.
So Sophia took us to her restaurant just opposite that memorial and said that she wanted to tell us her story. So she told me that...
That's her restaurant?
No, she calls it her restaurant.
Oh, I see. What she likes to go to.
And she said that it wasn't until 2004, I think, that she knew that her father was killed in Katyn.
Right.
And she made plans to go. She had thought she would never go anywhere near Russia. And she, and when her mother came back out of Russia, she brought 20 orphans with her. And one of those women ended up living in Krakow. So she went with this woman to Katyn, to the area where they were beginning to put monuments and the Pope was going. And when she had just left there, a and stayed the night in Ukraine. She got a phone call to say that her husband had been examining a PhD student in Wroclaw and had died immediately of a heart attack.
Yes.
And she's put that going to Russia and having that happen, that she knew that her father, how he had died.
Yes.
And then that happened. And she said, I wanted to tell you that because I have also had that missing father. And I just thought that was very nice. So she made not just welcome, but a real effort to kind of acknowledge each other's quite different stories. But what is it like to grow up with, in her case, not knowing what happened to her father, but not having him. And then hearing what had happened and having to put a story around that. But it was very sad too, because she was obviously then thrown right into immediate grief at exactly the same time. So realising, I thought I was late on finding all this out, but actually people are only still being able to talk about it. The society couldn't start till 1989.
Yes.
And some of this is still, people are still looking for people. So I realise I'm not so late. The guy at the Polish Museum sent me this, which is the house in Scotland where my father was, I don't know the word, is billeted or something.
Yes.
For some time, and when my mother and he were first married, this woman who looked after them all carried on writing to him for years and hoped he was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And those things are really very nice to know, that as much as there was awfulness, there was also. So this is another very old photo from Podbush, but I don't know what was said on the sign. This I sent to my children just to say, you know, this could be our oil field. This is forest love. So this is myself and Magdalena in Vancouver. You asked me about Janusz, and I think somehow I missed the pictures here, but one of the reasons I started to do all this was that Janusz died. Very suddenly of cancer about 2 or 3 years ago. I'm very bad at remembering that. He's younger than me, and his mother said he was very ill, wrote a letter that by the time I got it translated and emailed my cousin, she found out that yes, he had died.
Yes.
And I went to his funeral, and that was, for me, the funeral of all of the funerals. And people there didn't recognise him, but I did, in a way, because I had a very fixed image of him, I guess, in an open
coffin,
and extremely difficult. And his mother was with someone who she just replaced with me, as if I was the family person. So having been over here, out of it in so many ways, I've also been sort of very there as well. And afterwards, she had a lunch thing with, he and her were very active in the campaign for proportional representation, very politicised. She's very, wants history taught in schools, where it should be taught in schools, very active, where my other family, it's more this kind of history rather than big history.
Yes.
And but at the end, she said to me, through a poor young woman who does the translations, that Janusz had wanted to come over more. He didn't come, he had various plans to, and loved us very much, and she wanted us to know that. But he was waiting to get his PhD so that he would feel like an equal. And I found that extremely difficult, because I've done that, but I've done that here as part of my job. But PhD. In that kind of moment, there was the East, the West, the past, the present, all in that. The relationships between people across immense journeys. And I thought, my father I've always loved and never had any worries about that. It didn't matter that he went away, nothing has changed about that. But I don't think I was a sister to my half-brother. And that really struck me, that I'd thought about it my way, but not in any, what was the effect of us on them? What did he do? He was supposed to be fantastically intelligent. And because they had an issue of trying to get the house, his mother said he wasn't allowed to go to the right school, but he was 4 years ahead of everything, and he was 4 years. So he was full of promise,
So he got the brains.
Well, also in Poland, and I think in other places where there's been this kind of thing happen, education is prized, or you've got to strive much more than people who are comfortable, who never have to do anything.
You hear that put forward in the press over here as to why the Polish
and lots and lots of successful people I teach, and students who come from Africa, they work so hard, and that compulsion to do it, but also life's worth doing it. People are really mustered for life, but his mother has very much expected him to do that, and at that dinner, I learnt really that he lived on his own in Wroclaw, I think, in terrible conditions, and I don't think he was any happier, as they call it, than my father. And one of my reasons for doing this is that my brother here is now ill.
I'm so sorry.
But what all that has given me is that I've said myself some words for him, which is that I said to him, I showed him my words and he liked them. And I said that we're keeping you and we're doing it now. You're part of us.
Yes.
And the children and the babies to come will keep and love you too. So although it's a sad story, it's actually given me immense confidence through life to know that you can. You can love across all these things. You can, doesn't mean you survive or you're a hero or you even get your PhD, but it does give you something about knowing all that happens, which is, I never remember a time where I didn't know that there was war, not from the earliest possible age. There was never a time where I didn't know about it. My other part of family is Jewish, Polish, further generations back, so all of the family, and doesn't mean they ever talked about it. But as a little child, you know. So now I've done that. My father left when I was 5 and went to live in Poland, and he did live there. And I learnt about him living there. And he was happier there, although he had obviously lots of things going on in his life too. And I don't think he was ever. Sophia is more able to say to me, I think, that he was never the same person. And here we are. I don't know how you would sum up how it's affected us, but when I'm working and people say it's a single parent mother or the father can't, I'm always going, but the father's there. He's there in that child's mind. You can't, just because they're not there, not think that this child isn't thinking about all of their family members. So it has given me a lot that I also know what I don't know. I'll find out some more surprises, no doubt.
It's given you some insights that influence your practice.
Yeah, I still don't know what might. You know, I don't feel that this is now I know everything. Oh. And so in a fortnight's time, we're going to Poland, to Krakow, with little Sophia, to meet older Sophia.
Yes.
With my daughter. And my children have been very interested in it. We've been to some things in London. And so it starts with a very little story, but it's actually got more connected to Poland.
It's blossomed out.
Yeah.
And you're now part of a family network.
Yeah.
Like an extended family network that you hardly dreamt, hardly thought of existing. Yes. Who reciprocate.
Very much so.
Who reciprocate with you.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell me about this journey? This is a journey of discovery, isn't it?
It is, and that's why I haven't said
much about your father's journey.
It's my story, because
your journey of discovery.
You can't really tell much from what I've said about him.
Mm.
And that's why I wouldn't claim it to be his story. It's my story of that's how I know him, and that's all the only way I know him. So I think that's also what happens to a lot of children and adults. They've only got a bit of anyone anyway, but even if you've got something, it's it makes me feel good.
Yes. Should we draw to a close then?